purely out of fascination, I'd be curious what the decision-making process was that led to it not being twinned.
I would too. And Emmanuel can probably do one of those Swiss cheese softwares if we need to bring you on secretly to outline Route 11.
The New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, featuring your hosts, Gabe Reinick and Ken Holyoke.
Welcome back to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. I'm Gabe Reinick in Fredericton, New Brunswick, and I'm joined, as I am every fortnight, by Ken Holyoke, who is back in Lethbridge. How are you, Ken?
I'm not just back in Lethbridge, I am back in my office.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ken, it looks like, would I be right in saying that you are adjacent to the longest hallway in Canada right now?
My office is sitting right on that longest hallway.
That's great. Do you ever go out there and try to get up a really good head of speed running with a rolly chair and then throw yourself into it and see if you can crack the sound barrier like an indoor test pilot?
Yeah. I mean, you could do like a recreation of the Back to the Future thing. You know, they had to get the vehicle up to 55 miles per hour. You could definitely hit that in this hallway. You would have, I mean, you'd probably hit the doorways on the way, but you could definitely hit 55. You've got the space to hit that 55 miles per hour to go back in time.
That's great. And I bet the acoustics are terrific, too.
The acoustics are terrific. The air circulation is superb. But that's not being facetious. The view is actually lovely. And in a rare occurrence, it's raining here today. So it's
no
cool.
Kidding.
It's cloudy, a little bit of rain. We've had a turn in the weather.
That's great. And we are sponsored, as we are every fortnight, by the Association of Professional Archaeologists of New Brunswick and by the ULEF Shirk Exchange Grant. And so we thank them. We also would encourage you to, we always forget to do this, Ken, we encourage you to check out our website.
Yes.
Which is?
NewBrunswickArchaeology.com. And that's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word, archaeology spelled A-R-C-H-A-E-O-L-O-G-Y, NewBrunswickArchaeology.com. And we can also be found on YouTube. Just Google YouTube, New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. And our Instagram handle is @ New_Brunswick_archaeology, and archaeology spelled the same way.
That's right. And we appreciate all the interactions we have with you via those various tools to talk to us. So Ken, one of the things though, and this is going to be a real problem when this actually happens, is those are some pretty sweet domain names, but we are concerned that the name of this podcast doesn't quite convey what it's grown to be, how it's expanded in scope, how we've really grown in our own personal comfort podcasting since the first episode, which we still haven't figured out how to scrub off the internet. And so, yeah. Ken, one of the things that we also like to cultivate on this podcast is respect for the listener. And that means that we trust the listener to be able to provide useful ideas about what we might be able to do to improve this podcast. And that extends to possibly renaming it. And because our respect for the listener is so profound, we wouldn't steal that name. We would instead acquire it from the listener in exchange for a pretty sweet prize. And Ken, I understand we've got a really sweet prize lined up for the lucky listener who might rename this podcast today.
That is right. And so what's got a tangy flavor, a delightful crunch, aromatic notes, and a pH lower than 4.6? No, it's not the last sip of that craft sour that you just had. It's a pickle. Yes, that art form of preservation, that partner for Caesars, burgers, shawarma, and the only way that I can enjoy a cucumber safely is the pickle. And I don't know about you, Gabe, but I celebrate the pickle in all its forms. Beets, dill pickles, spicy beans, jalapenos, even some of our favorite archaeologists. I could even be convinced to down a pickled herring if the mood is right.
Absolutely.
Now, Gabe, do you know when the first pickle was pickled?
No, I don't, Ken.
According to Tori Avey of PBS Food, cucumbers are native to India and are thought to have been first pickled as far back as 2300 BCE. Indeed, to directly quote that article, the word pickle comes from Dutch pickle, or Northern German Pokel, meaning salt or brine, two very important components in the pickling process. Now, the New York Food Museum's pickle history timeline gives credit to, quote, archaeologists and anthropologists who claim that ancient Mesopotamians pickled things as early or earlier than 2400 BCE. But I think perhaps the most notable absence in that timeline is New Brunswick's own claim to pickle fame, the Lady Ashburnham.
Yeah, Ken, as you noted, we've also seen some pickled archaeologists in our time.
That's exactly right. That was one of my types of pickles.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so the Lady Ashburnham, which is also known as a Lady Ashburn or even Lady A Pickles, according to CBC, have quite a bit of interesting history. From a 2018 CBC article, I learned that Thomas Ashburnham was a retired British soldier who was possibly not under his own volition sent to New Brunswick. And it's there that he met Maria Anderson, a night telephone operator in Fredericton, who, at least reading between the lines, found him a designated driver many nights, and his charm won her over in 1903.
All right.
Thomas's father passed away, and he eventually became the 6th Earl of Ashburnham, and so Maria became Lady Ashburnham, and eventually gained a degree of fame for her mustard pickles.
They are delicious. I mean, at least the versions I've had are delicious. They weren't hers, but yeah.
So it is that this fortnight on the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, we are offering a seasonal package deserving of the harvest season. And as many of our listeners are probably shaking off a bit too much capital H harvest this past weekend, and Gabe, you'll note that my time-traveling prowess means that I am able to pre-record a memory of a weekend that has not yet happened. So listener, we were just talking about Back to the Future. Well, we've just done it.
Yeah, Jason Isbell was very good.
Yes. So if you, listener, are the lucky one to come up with a new name for the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, our prize package is all pickle. You'll be provided with a fresh pair of laces for your shoes so that we can take a walk down to the local farmer's market on an upcoming Saturday morning. Together, we'll make a selection of fine vegetables grown in New Brunswick, so onions and cucumbers are the main ingredients. We'll then head out to score all the flour, sugar, vinegar, salt, and seasonings, so that's turmeric, dry mustard, celery seed. We might even luck out with some local mustard seed, actually. We'll then stroll down to Brunswick Street with our supplies. We'll use my Grammy Jean's own Lady Ashburnham pickle recipe and arrive at the once Ashburnham estate that is still standing on Brunswick Street and inquire with the current residents if they'll let us hang out and get down to cooking. It's there that we're going to spend the day making this New Brunswick delicacy, bottling, sealing, and slapping an NB ArcPod sticker on that jar before sending you away with a pantry full of delights, and we leave with a new name for our podcast. And so, if this sounds like a great way to spend your late summer, early fall Saturday, you can pickle that, listener, and if you can find us a new name for the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
Well, that's pretty exciting, Ken. That's the kind of prize that could just keep giving all winter, too.
Exactly.
Once you've got a pantry full of pickles. So, Ken, where will the vinegar-loving listener send in that winning name?
They would send that entry into newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. That's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word. Archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY. newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com.
That's right. And so, Ken, if you go to that mailbag, what have we got in there?
Well, we do have some mail. All right. So we've got our usual riffraff in here.
Mm-hmm.
The first email comes from Jeff, and it says St. Croix and the border between the United States and New Brunswick. Okay, I'm going to pull this over to this side so it's a little easier to read. Hi, I recently started listening to your podcast, and although I haven't taken a single archaeology course, I have a deep love for history. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming to the show, Jeff, and we're glad that you found us. I find the backdrop of archaeology in New Brunswick that you described to be a fantastic way to put history into context. In one of your early episodes, I heard a brief mention of how archaeology played a role in defining the border between the United States and New Brunswick. This caught my attention because my fourth great-granduncle, Thomas Henry Barclay, who was formerly the British Consul General in New York, among other roles, and he's got a link in here to some of his other roles, was involved in that process. Appointed by George III, Barclay, along with David Howell, who was appointed by George Washington, and Egbert Benson, chosen by Barclay and Howell.
I'm sorry, Egbert?
Pardon me?
Egbert?
Egbert Benson. Yeah,
that's a great name.
Eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Worked to establish the border based on Jay's Treaty of 1794. The fifth article of this treaty aimed to clarify the border described by the Treaty of Paris in 1783 as the St. Croix River. As you mentioned, the challenge was to determine which of the two major rivers flowing into Passamaquoddy Bay was Samuel de Champlain's St. Croix. The images below, from selections from the correspondence of Thomas Barclay, former British Consul General at New York, and he's included a, it looks like an excerpt from one of the Natural History Society bulletins.
Oh, cool.
But he's also given us a link here.
Neat.
To a government, a Library of Congress. It's a book called The Selections from the Correspondence of Thomas Barclay.
Oh, cool.
Describe this endeavor. I thought this might be of interest to you. Well, it certainly is, Jeff.
It is.
By the way, Thomas Henry Barclay's niece, Eve Barclay, Eve Stairs, was a United Empire loyalist, and virtually everyone with the surname Stairs in New Brunswick can trace their lineage back to her. She married Richard Stairs and settled in the parish of Northampton, York County, New Brunswick. Cheers, Jeff from St. John. Well,
that's
Jeff
a great
from St. John,
email.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
And it also, I mean, it plays into, you know, the World Series is coming up here, and I guess that means Matt Stairs must also be descended from him, the former, I guess, first baseman and DH for the Phillies.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very
that's
cool.
That's a great email. I'm jotting down here that I will check out the correspondence of Thomas Barclay, but we can also direct the listener to, and maybe Jeff, if he hasn't seen it already, there was an article in Acadiensis in 1972 by R.D. and J.I. Tallman, and it's called The Diplomatic Search for the St. Croix River, 1796 to 1798, okay. And that might be an article that, if you haven't seen it, deals with sort of some of that, and very cool. Neat.
Very cool. Yeah, thanks. Thanks again, Jeff. Okay, our next email is called New Name for Podcast, and it's from Anne. Hello, lads. Sympathies to Ken for his lack of airport Chili's access recently. Well, Anne, you're about to hear about that. I enjoyed the podcast. Keep up the good work. My offering for a new podcast name is Absolute Units with Gabe and Ken. For the data set, I've never listened to the podcast in the bath. However, beyond prizes for renaming the podcast, this bath listening demographic could open up sponsorship options. Just saying. Thanks, Annie. Well, thank you, Annie.
Thank you, Annie. Appreciate that. And if you know someone in the bath bomb industry who is interested in sponsoring this podcast, please put us in touch.
Yeah. And continuing our correspondence on Vermont creamies, and Michael, you'll like this, that I sent Gabe a screenshot from my, all this talk of Vermont creamies has now flooded my Instagram feed with pictures of people enjoying Vermont apple creamies or whatever, the cider creamies or whatever.
Maple creamies.
Maple creamies.
Yeah.
So Michael says, Ken and Gabe, I enjoyed hearing your inclusion of my note on Vermont maple creamies in the last episode and thought I'd add one note mainly for Ken. I too have difficulty with lactose digestion, and ice cream is one of the foods where I'm almost guaranteed to have a reaction. For me anyway, I found that the chewable tablets one can find in pharmacies and grocery stores, in the US anyway, they're sold under lactate. Well, actually, Michael, I discovered that lactate is the American version and lactese is the Canadian.
Lactese sounds like what happens when someone is eating a maple creamy around you, but you are lactose intolerant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they'll do the trick. I take one when I start eating, and maybe later. So I have to take about four of them to get ice cream, Michael. That's to give you a sense of where I'm at on the lactose intolerance spectrum. It does have the downside of introducing another flavor just before the ice cream, but it's worth it for me. Maybe you've tried this. I have, yeah. Some of them are mint. One related thing I didn't mention in my earlier email is that although I've seen varying information about this, creamies are generally made with a higher butterfat content than other soft serve ice cream. In case you're interested, here's a link to an article from this summer about the creamy tradition from a statewide online news source. And this is 7 Days Vermont, and he links a news story here that is called Creamy Confidential, What It Takes to Create Vermont's Treasured Summer Treat. And so we'll maybe throw that in the show notes.
Yeah, if you could drop that in the show notes, Ken, that'd be great.
Yeah, and so thanks again for your good work. Looking forward as season 3 continues. Thank you, Michael. Always love getting your emails and hearing about, I got to get myself down to Vermont here at some point. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Michael. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and that does it for the mailbag.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate hearing from all these people. In the future, Ken, if someone else wants to email in, where would they send those emails again?
They're going to send that email to newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word, archaeology spelled archaeology, newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com.
That's right. And Ken, there is something else exciting that we have been using that mailbox for. And what that is the listener will recall that we had a competition, which has just concluded, which was to send us a picture of you listening to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. And we provided a little sample of the show mascot, Orange Julius, listening to Out of the Console, Into the Sack. Orange Julius being the 3D printed Julius Caesar that's been painted in an orange marble color.
Yep, and that's and that was compliments of Manu Baines. That's at Browntown Games, and so he does YouTube videos and reviews of 3D printing and different paint materials and stuff like that.
That's right, and you'll recall that there are some pretty great prizes. First prize is going to get miscellaneous swag and three books. The trilogy, if you will, and runner up is going to get a copy of the New Brunswick Archaeology Bibliography, which is just released. And so, what we're going to ask Emmanuel now to do, Emmanuel, he's sitting over there in the producer's room right now. Emmanuel, you know that these microphones don't really pick up the sound of Ken reaching into the bag for the prize draw. So, if what you could do right now, as Ken reaches into that bag, we're going to need you to add some applause from the studio audience. And if you could also maybe some rustling paper or something like that. So listener, I'm going to do this in a play-by-play kind of way. Ken's reaching into the bag, and he's grabbing a name out of the bag. Laura. Congratulations, Laura. So Laura is going to get, I believe, some pronghorn swag, some UNB swag, and three books. Is that right, Ken?
That is right. Yeah, and maybe whatever other swag. So Laura was an Instagram entrant?
Yes, Laura was an Instagram entrant. Yes.
Okay, so we'll reach out to you from the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast Instagram account, and we'll touch base on that. And so I'm going to reach back in the bag here to pull out our runner-up prize.
Excellent. So Ken is reaching into the bag, and so Emmanuel, if we could do another little bit of a drum roll here.
Taylor. So congratulations, Taylor, who said that she had some trouble getting it to upload on Instagram, so she sent us an email entrance.
Yes, congratulations, Taylor.
And Taylor's prize is a book, correct?
Taylor gets a book, a New Brunswick Archaeology Bibliography, Works to 2022.
Yeah, and so for those of you who are listening and wondering why we actually did... This was a real contest.
That's right.
So.
And what were we celebrating, Ken?
This was the Quest for 10K contest. Mm-hmm. And so, who knows? I think the next milestone is that we're going to have our 50th episode coming up fairly soon.
Oh, are we really?
Yeah. I think we're at 43 now. So I think this might be the 44th episode.
That's exciting. And so one of the things that we're trying to convey is that we do, in fact, sometimes do competitions that are winnable.
Yes. Yeah. Real prizes.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, someday we may rename the podcast, but we're we also have elaborate prizes for that are meant to engage the audience.
Yeah, the other one is real. It's just that nobody has won it yet.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes what is it that Edmund Hillary said about Everest? You know, why do you climb it? Because it's there. You know, it's about the journey, listener. But sometimes, you know, we know that. You know, not all listeners are into the journey. Some people want the quick return of a book in their mailbox or some pronghorn swag. Yep. And that's what we're gonna get here for Taylor and Laura.
Yeah, and the listeners who have written in, Gabe and I are coordinating on a mass mailing campaign. The first couple of weeks of the academic semester are incredibly intense. But starting next week, I think we'll both have a little bit of time that we can start filtering things out to people via snail mail. So for those of you who have sent us addresses already, expect some mail sometime in the coming days. And as we revitalize our swag deposits, once we've got our new sticker manufacturer lined up.
That's right. And again, actually, you know, another thing we could use, if you know a sticker manufacturer who is engaged in at least superficially ethical business practices, we would love to hear about it. You know, we'd love to support a small sticker manufacturer. But as we've said before, we will also settle for one that's not trying to immunitize the Echeton. So.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations to Lauren Taylor, and we will be in touch with your loot.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic. And thank you again for entering, everybody who entered. And maybe, like I said, we will probably have another real prize coming up here. I'm guessing if I kind of look at the calendar, if we're actually at 44 episodes here and we're 6 episodes out, we'd be looking at probably sometime in December, I think, would be when that 50th episode would be rolling around, which would be kind of a fun time of year to have another prize. So I think maybe it'll be the 50th episode spectacular.
Maybe even New Year's or something.
Yeah, yeah, we might have to have a whole bunch of guest appearances. Isn't that what they do on those, like, big milestone episodes?
I think that's a great idea. I don't know if that's what they do, but it's certainly what we could do.
But a variety show, if you will.
That's right. But speaking of other exciting things, Ken, we should also flag that if the listener could save the date, November 16th, I believe we're going to have a book launch at the Harriet Irving Library. This is tentative, listeners, but this is a pencil it into your calendar. Don't put it in Sharpie yet. But we are hoping to, in November 16th, have a book launch here in Fredericton for the New Brunswick Archaeology Bibliography.
So we quote the title properly. It is The Bibliography of New Brunswick Archaeology Works to 2022. From Gaspereau Press.
Thank you.
Trevor Dow, Ken Holyoke, and Gabe Reinick.
And that is not all one word.
That is not all one word, no. Yeah. And hopefully at this book launch, I won't spend the entire time talking to a lawyer. That's my goal for this book launch.
Ken, would you like to explain to the listener why you were talking to him? You've just made it sound very ominous. Ken and I have talked to lawyers about books before, in particularly dark periods of publishing when we were very naive.
Our book launch for the Far Northeast book was interrupted by what was probably one of the single most stressful few hours of my life, which was about 2 weeks before we were supposed to move to Lethbridge and close on our house. The bank all of a sudden withdrew our mortgage. And so I spent the better part of the afternoon. Gabe saw me, probably saw my face turn entirely white. And I disappeared from the, more white.
He had the look of a man who was going from mortgage to leskage very quickly, that's what I would say.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a awful afternoon, but it all worked out in the end. It wasn't as exciting of a book launch as I would have wanted it to be.
It was more exciting than you would have wanted. That was the problem.
So
this one we're hoping will be a little bit more exciting, and will probably involve, a little bit of a couple talks, some celebration, and then a cocktail party after is the goal. So mark your calendar and stay tuned for more information about that, both here and presumably on our social media. So Ken, we have a sort of interesting show lined up in that this is This is a variety show.
Yeah.
And that is because we were doing some recording while you were out here. And during August.
Yes. I was out doing my field work and research. Part of this visit was Gabe and I and Trevor Dow and Christine Lovelace, as well as Indigenous interlocutors with Wolastoqe Nation in New Brunswick. We're all working on a collaborative project at UNB Archives and Special Collections, studying an archaeological collection that is held there. But I was also doing some field work, so I'm starting a new project looking at some of the impact of climate change in the lower Wolastoqe. So doing some survey work at known archaeological sites and basically looking at some of the impacts of erosion that's impacting island sites in particular in the middle of the river. And so I was out for just over 2 weeks, and we fit in a few different excursions. Among them, though, was an invite to visit one of the Mi'kmaq communities in eastern New Brunswick, Indian Island. We got to meet up with our friend Katrina Sock, who took us on a tour of Indian Island, after which Gabe and I drove back to Buktush and reminisced about the Route 11 archaeology project. And you might remember back in episode one of the season, we were asking if anybody has any explanation as to why that highway was never twinned, but you'll get to hear firsthand what we were doing.
We were dismayed. We were being dismayed.
We were dismayed. Yes. Yeah. And yes. we were wondering all the hard work and all those safe things.
Yes. Cause archaeology in that case really was about saving lives, because that road is dangerous.
It is very dangerous. Yeah. Gabe was pretty excited about Damascus coffee, and Gabe, yes. I think maybe your excitement was tempered afterwards. Would that be true?
I am sorry to say that yes, it was tempered. I mean, it still seems like a fine coffee shop, but it was not as thrilling as it was 10 years ago.
It was also about a 25-minute drive through the city of Moncton.
We were surprised about this when we thought, because we the previous night had thought we might just drive into Moncton for dinner, and I'm glad we didn't, because it would have been such a haul, and also because we had a great dinner at, oh man, what was that place
here,
called?
I'm going to look it up. Do some stalling for a second here, because we do need to give that restaurant a shout out, because the food was fantastic.
We really do. And so basically, listener, you're going to hear that we were confused. Pirate de la Mer has not moved. We were just somehow confused about that. And it's sort of odd that we each constructed a shared memory about where that restaurant actually was, but we're wrong.
So that restaurant has never moved. We just both in our minds thought it was in a place that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Ponzi's restaurant and fish market is where we ate.
Yeah.
Ponzi. And it's just, it's sort of just east of Route 11. So if you're at the Auberge, and you sight your compass at about, you know, like somewhere around, I guess, 100 degrees, you'll find yourself, with a firm, steady pace, at Ponzi's, and like incredible price for, for oysters,
couple of good lobster rolls, great price on oysters. So yeah, we did oysters, lobster rolls, and fries, I believe.
It was a great meal.
It really was.
And
check them out. They're also open an hour later than everyone else in town.
Yeah, which is a topic of conversation that we'll have. And so, Gabe and I were out in the field together there that one day. While I was doing my field work, I had the opportunity to interview Sharon Cunningham, who's the president of the St. John River Society.
And Ken, you're going to tell us about a new term that you learned from.
Yeah, the Warfingers. So this is Sharon's and compatriots, the groups that are working hard to preserve and revitalize and repair the historic steam wharves that dot the landscapes of the Lower Wollastoog, and some of the intersections with history and archaeology and site preservation that her and her group are working in.
It's open warfare out there.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Finally, we're going to catch up with me. At the Calgary Airport.
So Ken, why don't we just for a mention discuss how smoothly did your trip to Fredericton go?
So as we hinted at in a previous episode, my trip was not great. In both directions, I had a full flight cancellation. So my flight from Calgary to Fredericton, which was supposed to be a direct flight, was canceled. I was rebooked on a flight that bounced me through, I believe it was Ottawa on the way out on a different airline. And on my way back, I was flying with Porter Airlines, which bounced me through Toronto out to Calgary. Excellent airline if you have the opportunity. It's kind of like they treat you like you are a passenger who is paid to go on their airline.
I've had very good luck with Porter. Yeah. The seats are also more comfortable than other airlines.
They are, yeah. And so, but my connecting flight, because the only flights that come into Lethbridge are WestJet, and there's this little bounce flight. So I recorded a short blurb saying that I actually didn't have time to go to the Chili's in the Calgary airport, one of my favorite institutions, regardless of which terminal I've been in. I didn't have time to go there because I had a very short layover. And so that being said, I recorded this, and then about like 6 minutes later, about 10 minutes before my flight was about to board, they canceled it, and I was left holding my bag, and they also said that it was beyond their control, and therefore I was not going to be offered a taxi cab or a hotel room. There were no hotel rooms available at the airport, I just took a cab back to Lethbridge that night.
That seems very, very wise, but it also sounds like possibly there's something going wrong in the way you've been traveling lately, because that means you sort of went from one whole trip to no trip. very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. No, it was a good thing that I used FedEx to move my gear back and forth. Because number one, I don't think it would ever have arrived in New Brunswick. And number two, I don't think it would ever have gotten back to Lethbridge.
So did you check a bag on the way back?
No, I flew. I just carried on. So
very wise, yeah.
I was carrying artifacts, and so carried them on my person.
Yeah.
Because I had to change airlines, if you go through an airport changing airlines, you have to go back through security. So I would have had to collect my bags and then go back through security again.
You had to change from Porter to Hertz.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, Calgary Taxi or something. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I can't remember what the cab company was, but it, yeah, so it was, wasn't quite planes, trains, and automobiles, but it was a bit of a journey to get back and forth.
Absolutely.
That being said, it was a very successful field season, fairly short in the field, but some really great, got to paddle on the Wollastug, which was absolutely beautiful. Visit some pretty interesting sites that I think we'll probably talk about in more detail in a future episode. Maybe we'll do an episode on Fulton Island or something, get a couple
of people
that have worked there, to talk about it as well. So,
yeah. And we should say we've had some inquiries via email about possible interviews, and we actually have put out some feelers to folks and are trying to get some things scheduled.
Yes.
So hopefully stay tuned. We're not abandoning great sites. We may be abandoning the theme of human environmental interactions since we haven't actually gotten around to doing that yet. But you know, we were humans
in the environment that that week.
Absolutely, we totally were. So Ken, I mean, I think that's our intro here. And so, listeners, stay tuned for Katrina Sock, Discovering Route 11, Sharon Cunningham, and Ken's live updates from the Calgary airport/taxi terminal.
Exactly. Talk to you soon, listener.
Talk to you soon.
So we're back here on the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, and we're on location in New Brunswick.
We are indeed. And are you going to say where we are, Ken, or are you just going to leave it vague? Or should we have our guest? Have our guest say where we are.
Yeah, we're joined by Katrina Sock. Where are we, Katrina?
We are on the ancestral island of Indian Island, New Brunswick, Mi'kmaq Nation.
Exactly. And we are out on a beautiful sunny day. We left Fredericton in a monsoon, and we arrived here on a breezy, very sunny day in Indian Island.
I was surprised because I thought it was going to be really good when Ken, he likes to do the tropical storm surveys. These are popular when Ken's in town. He likes to bring the rain.
Three field seasons running, I've managed to dovetail my field work with either a hurricane or a post-tropical storm. So.
It's great because not only is it uncomfortable, it means the water is too high to see anything.
Yeah. It's what, probably like 32 degrees right now.
Yeah, exactly.
If there wasn't a breeze, we would all have melted by this point. But you know, coming from Alberta, the humidity is actually kind of welcome. My skin has never looked better.
Yes. And so, Katrina, could you tell us a little bit about where we are, or tell the listener a little bit about where we are and about some of the history out here?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, history. This island was previously occupied by my ancestors. We did eventually move to the mainland. Indian Island is, in fact, a peninsula, but we're named after the island itself. You can find all types of artifacts on the beach. There was an English and French fort here at one point in time, possibly an Acadian homestead, old church, dancing grounds, and yeah, I don't know what else.
Yeah. And you showed us a historic map of the place.
Yes.
Which was very cool. Can you tell us more about the map?
Oh, gosh, nope.
Sorry, I just know
it was... from 1903.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and the map shows essentially where the locations of the old Acadian village are, and where the fort is sort of on the north end of the island.
And the old church,
yeah. So, so kind of roughly where all this stuff is in the mangrove-like forest that dots the main part of the island.
Yes.
And we're staying where the wind is right now on the beach. So,
and as a little hint to some of the things people might have eaten out here, Katrina's actually carrying her clam digging kit. So we're getting two birds stoned at once, as they say, back on the mainland.
Yeah.
I have a spade and a milk crate.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're going to see the clam digging in action. Her mom has led the way down the beach, I think, to go probably find the good stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Talk to you soon, listener. So we're a little bit further down the beach here. Gabe, what did we just walk through that you just discovered?
Well, Ken, I just contracted malaria as I walked through, I think, millions of underfed mosquitoes.
He has one behind his
glasses. Yeah, they
headed for my brain. Don't worry.
They weren't with us before, but we're bringing them with us now.
Ken, I think we've learned why the old fort was on the other end of the island.
Exactly. Yeah. The prevailing wind was definitely an advantage as we make our way further down the shoreline here.
It was. We haven't found anything yet either. That's our other excitement.
No. Yeah. Well, excitement, but also like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
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 So the shell bearing area that was probably once along the shore does not appear to be here anymore, which is symptomatic of kind of what we're sort of interested in being out here about, is sort of understanding what's going on with the changing shorelines in this area. And so, Katrina, what have you kind of noticed over the last? Yeah, that's very sweaty
and bloody. Okay, what was the question?
You've noticed a lot of change going on the island over the last few years, and what's some of the stuff that you've noticed yourself?
It's the bank erosion for sure.
Yeah.
On the other end that we first went to, I remember coming here as a young girl, and the bank, it was actually like a face, you know, and now there's like lots of slumpage, and the erosion happens like underneath, and eventually the bank falls over. It kind of acts as mitigation for the erosion, but eventually that falls and the process starts all over again.
Yeah. So this is one of countless places basically along the coasts in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, PEI, basically everywhere in coastal regions, sort of all throughout North America, but we're seeing it kind of up close right now, that are seeing the impacts of climate change and rising sea levels and sort of more frequent and more intense storm events, essentially. So we'll continue going down the bank here, and we're about to walk across a marsh. So I think we'll get to encounter more mosquitoes.
I think it's gonna be great.
We're actually going to just hit the recorder right now,
okay,
so that we can have active conversation that we can...
Yeah.
So to go with the picture.
Yeah. I actually have friends down from Nova Scotia, and they told us that their worst day for mosquitoes is still better than our best day.
So at the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, we pride ourselves on going into non-specifically archaeology topics on occasion, including great ox and other. So Katrina, we were talking the other day, and you were putting on a class for some folks because you work at Kujibukwak Park.
Yes.
And so what were you doing for the class?
Cedar weaving. So I'm trying to revive cedar bark weaving since the black ash is being threatened by the emerald ash borer beetle. And I was inspired by cedar mat fragments that were excavated from the Metaponaug area. I think it's the P. Hogan site, I believe.
Yeah.
And the fragments I seen were checker and twill weave at the Canadian History Museum storage. Yeah.
So what kind of tools would you use, and like what's the technique for like harvesting the cedar, and like is it similar to black ash where you soak it and pound it out to get like thin strips and go from there? Or?
No, actually, I'm using the cambium bark.
Okay.
So like the nice inner bark and then the outer bark. I remove the outer bark, and then from there we soak it, we cut our strips, and it was a learning curve for sure because I'm a black ash weaver myself, so I'm used to wood. And it's been a great experience, actually. We finished a mat last year, and every row was a visitor, so I like promoting that. And
very cool.
We're doing that again this year with a different design.
And so for the listener, black ash baskets are pretty well-renowned and kind of world-renowned Wabanaki technology that was used both, we find evidence of it in the archaeological record, but you see some beautiful art objects from the last couple hundred years as well. And I think there's been quite a revitalization among Wabanaki weavers in the last couple decades, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Onward and forward. Knee deep in the... I guess it'd be part of the Northumberland Strait.
Well, Ken, I think we've just learned that we've actually almost walked to PEI today. We were just checking the GPS, and I don't think it's a mirage. I can see the wind turbines of PEI.
Yep.
And the listener will know that PEI is known for its oysters.
Yep. So Katrina is out in the water right now.
Yeah, in PEI. Or is that international waters?
I think she's far enough out that she's in international waters now. And she is going to procure us some of the local terroir oysters.
It's true. And it's a good thing. I'm actually going to look in my backpack right now to make sure we have a little lemon.
And I brought the Tabasco.
Oh, so good, okay.
We're set.
This is excellent. It would be a real shame if we'd walked all the way to PEI and then had to swim back to Sobeys.
Yes, it's interprovincial journey and get nothing in return.
It is. It's true. Who knows? We may need to get a special permit now that we're on PEI.
No, I was saying we're podcasters.
It's okay, sir. Yeah. We're podcasters.
So Ken, we're leaving Indian Island Marine.
Yep, Marina, the boat launch.
Yep, we're back from almost making it to PEI. We learned.
Yep, we got very close to it.
We did. We could see it quite clearly. And what we have just discovered is we've checked some of the previous site locations that were recorded of the midden, and we've gone back to those points and we've confirmed that there is no more midden, which is too bad.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. So the spots that we had looked at earlier that Gabe had speculated were probably where the midden used to be, do appear to be where the midden used to be. So that's not great.
Yeah, and it's sort of a kind of stark reminder of coastal erosion.
It is.
We've also acquired some Gatorade.
A Freezy.
Yep,
and we've got a semi confirmation on what might be a paleo point.
We do, which is sort of exciting. So we've been doing some collections research out here as well, and it's a probably collected from somewhere out here, Munsungan Church, we think.
Yeah,
maybe it's Normanskill Rhyolite. Normanskill Church. What are rocks? So it's red, and it's a lancelet shape. Seems to be a lot of action on the base.
Yep.
And it...
You've heard the term before, listener. Aggressively basally thin.
That's right. That's right. And it's got the kind of flaking around the edges that tend to be associated with paleonia points.
Yep. Yeah. So it's flat on one side, which and sort of dome... a little bit domed on the other, so we call that plano convex.
That's also what Boeing has been calling its stock prices lately, I think. So listener, we're about to pause here because we're stopping to do one last little bit of collections research with Katrina, and then we will rejoin you back in the mobile command.
And over and out.
So Ken, for our listeners who may be veterans of New Brunswick CRM, we have a very special on location tonight for our next couple steps of our podcast. Do you care to share with the listener where we're going to be staying?
We're going to be staying at the Auberge Bucktouche Inn.
Uh-huh.
A famed establishment in Bucktouche, uh-huh, New Brunswick, that has hosted archaeology crews for the better part of a decade during the twinning of Route 11.
Mm-hmm.
I think... most people that you talk to in archaeology who are of around our age probably worked on that project at some point.
I think they did.
Every company, yes, worked on that project at some point.
The companies we were working for worked on that project at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was a little strange.
Yeah.
I think I might have had a better summer than you did, since it seemed like I was just driving around with a small crew testing watercourses, while you were driving around with a big crew Swiss cheesing entire county.
Yeah, it was, I was part of the original walkover. I walked most of the route alongside a number of folks, including a dear colleague of ours, Greg Holland, who is now a famous BC archaeologist.
He is a famous BC archaeologist. Also, he's a BC archaeologist, but he also runs a small swag company.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I
believe it's a backpack company that sponsors an archaeology company. I'm not quite sure how it works.
I remember. So I will say I remember digging a lot of test pits in very clayey soil.
Yeah.
And we found a couple like lithics in a couple of spots. I don't remember.
ever getting to the point, I might have started my master's before the kind of exciting excavation stuff started.
I was going
to
say, because even though every archaeologist in the province was staying at that hotel at the time, I don't ever remember an evening conversation that began, "You'll never believe what we found today."
Well, so actually one did.
Oh, did it?
The probably the most notable find that we made was another Greg that used to work with us. He and I one day found a safe in the woods that had been jimmy-rigged open, and inside had like a zigzag ashtray and somebody's ID card and a couple of other like cheap necklaces and
no
watches.
Kidding.
And yeah, and so so we ended the day by going to the local RCMP office to drop off what we assumed was a stolen safe that could be returned to the individual whose ID card was inside the safe.
I hope they appreciated that.
They did.
Would you care to read their name on it?
I don't remember what the guy's name was, but they did. We got a call a few weeks later that they had identified the individual and returned their goods.
You know, a good evening never starts with your safe being stolen, does it?
Yeah. So I suspect, I do wonder if the individual is somebody who maybe didn't want that safe to be found, or that was involved in things that having the RCMP contact them even to return stolen goods might not have been exactly what they needed.
That's very possible. You're just trying to start over again, and someone finds your safe in the woods.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's archaeology for you. So we're fairly excited about this. We're also excited because even though we lived in Buktush for a while, we have not spent much time exploring the area outside of the footprint of Route 11.
I was saying earlier today that I know, well, I guess it would be the, I don't know which lane would be the new one.
I was just wondering that, because I was going to say, were we southbound or north? Or I'm not even sure what we, yeah, I don't know.
It was on the, I guess if it would be on the west side of what was most of what the twinning took place. So I knew, I was very familiar with within about 100 meters of the then single lane of Route 11, which for the listener that's not familiar, probably a very good thing they twinned that highway.
I remember it just seeing some extremely harrowing feats of driving. I remember a cyclist was killed out there while we were working out there. I once saw two Mack trucks and two sedans basically do a sort of figure eight thing in which they were all in the wrong lanes but somehow managed to get by each other alive. There were some real adventures on that project.
Yeah.
None of which were, as we mentioned, archaeological in nature. But I think, Ken, our other goal, we're going to try to experience some of the culinary delights.
Yes, and so Gabe, a restaurant that was actually very close to the parking lot of the Auberge.
Yes.
That I think was near and dear to many of our hearts is the Pirat de Mer.
That's right.
And for those of you who are not bilingual, that is the Pirate of the Sea.
Uh-huh, yep. The Pirate de la Mer, as we say in English.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we recall it being pretty good, having a pretty good lobster roll.
Very good lobster roll. Good clam strips and fries.
Yep. Extensive wine list, if I recall.
It was a takeout counter, wasn't it? I don't know if I ever ate in there.
Oh, I definitely ate in.
Maybe we did.
Yeah. At a certain point, when...
The Auberge had a really nice patio, though.
It did, yeah. But I mean, but the... I'd had a few dinners a week, typically, that consisted of those, I believe then, recently released Buffalo Snyder's pretzel bites.
Oh, yeah.
The kind that you... you sometimes eat, and then you just decide that you've been living on the Route 11 project for long enough that maybe you don't need vegetables that night.
Yeah, it was a long few years.
It was a long few years. Yeah, I actually was only doing Route 11 for a summer, but that summer was a long few years.
Yeah, and that would have been the first project you worked on in New Brunswick, wouldn't it?
It was the first extensive project I held a permit on, okay. I believe. Yeah. I think I'd held some permits on some like little day projects. I believe my first project in New Brunswick was actually running it involved an abattoir being routed into a sewage lagoon.
Okay.
In a town called Clare, New Brunswick.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the project is about as glamorous as it sounds.
The company you worked for at the time did a lot of sewage lagoons, because that was the first project I ever worked on was a sewage lagoon.
Yeah, we were known for our sewage lagoon work, I believe.
Okay.
So we are we're going to hurtle into Buktoosh here, and Ken, is there anything you wanted to share about this this drive here? And
We are on some windy roads outside of Rexton.
And
I don't know, from the GPS, it looks like we're just about to turn onto Route 11 and experience that double lane highway for the first time.
So I think it's probably important, Ken, that we record our reviews of how the twinning went.
Yes.
So I think as Ken, I don't know about you, but sometimes when you're involved in an important project and you're really helping to bring something to fruition that's going to make the people of Kent County safer, I don't want to say that we're proud, but I think we're going to feel a certain contentedness that we've really done our bit for public safety.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And that's really what the whole project was about.
It was. And I, Ken, really, archaeology is about saving lives.
Yeah, I think truer words were never spoken.
Exactly. Ken, could you also confirm for me, we are in fact in Kent County, right? I'm remembering vaguely what the cover of the permit report looked like, and I think it mentioned Kent County, but I'm realizing I'm not quite sure.
I think that would be right, yeah.
Okay. Well, listener, if you would like to check the sticker from the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast and locate what county we are in right now.
So we are currently driving over Route 11.
Oh, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken, I don't know if I've seen a finer highway.
It's not twinned there.
It does not appear to be twinned.
And how do we get onto it?
Huh. Well, listener, this is disappointing. We're gonna try to turn around, listener.
Well, I can't get off of this road, but maybe there's an on ramp that
we maybe missed something here.
Yeah.
Listener, we are Ken, I might have walked through this field once when we were working on Route 11.
So what we might be seeing here, maybe we're above where it was twinned. Maybe this 134 is what the other lane is.
Huh, that could be. But yeah, I feel like I may have walked through this field at one point, Ken. And so, Ken, what were some good times that you had on the Route 11 project?
The friends that we made.
It was the friends, yeah.
That's
I recall on that project, it was a fairly early, not everyone had smartphones yet, and so the company had a BlackBerry, and I sometimes was in charge of carrying the company BlackBerry, and the company BlackBerry had an early and not very effective version of that voice-to-text thing, so you get a message, if someone left you a message, it would try to translate it into text that you could read. And translate is the operative word here, because one of the fellows that was working for us has a friend of the show, friend of ours, Christian, but he speaks English with a little bit of an accent. And there had been what I think in the parlance of safety we would call a near miss.
Yes.
And my recollection is that he and Trevor were laying in line, and a deer jumped over Christian, and Christian thought, and then the bear that was chasing the deer jumped over Christian.
That's right.
At which point Christian screamed, and Trevor grabbed an axe and came sprinting down the line, at which point Christian screamed again as Trevor arrived on the scene armed for business. And this was relayed to me through the BlackBerry that just expressed that Christian wanted to know if we wanted to go to the gala. And that, dear listener, was when I knew something bad had happened. Okay, so have we located where we're going here?
We are.
We're on 134 now.
134, so we're going to be turning towards the 11 in 1.5 kilometers.
Okay, but are we above where it's twinned?
We must be.
That'd be a shame.
So I think we'll get to experience almost the whole thing.
Yeah.
We could complete the journey by leaving Buktoosh south to go to Moncton, and then we'll have experienced the entire twinning.
We could. We'll see if we want to do that tomorrow. We could stop at Damascus Coffee, which was a fine Moncton coffee establishment.
Oh, yeah? Actually,
I hope it's still there.
Calactus.
Yeah, Calactus was pretty good too. Which is do you know if Calactus still there?
Haven't the foggiest.
Yeah, and is the Taj still there? Fine Indian establishment in Moncton.
Also not clear.
Yeah, and there was also that beer and steak kind of pub place.
Oh, the Hog, Tide and Boar.
Tide and Boar. It was pretty good.
It was excellent, actually. That was one of the first. I feel like that was one of the first true gastro pubs in New Brunswick.
Yeah,
kind of like
I don't
know. High end, like kind of a high end burger place.
Yeah, that's right.
But also the Pump House.
The Pump House was quite good.
It was one of the OG New Brunswick craft brewers.
That's right. And is it still there?
I would assume so. It was a bit of an institution.
Yeah, if it lends itself to it, I might have a Pump House with dinner.
Yes, there you go.
Pump House beer.
I was never a big fan of the blueberry beer that everybody was.
Everyone did like the blueberry beer a lot. I think as fruit beers go, it's one of the best.
We are accelerating up the on ramp right now to
an untwinned.
An untwinned. Really? Well, yeah, no, an untwinned.
This is untwinned, yeah.
Okay.
This is where we find out we're just going the wrong way. listen to this. This highway appears to be untwinned.
Yeah.
Well, that's disappointing, isn't it, Ken?
It is. So I wonder when the twinning starts.
It's a great question. The twinning almost started this morning when we almost put on matching shirts.
I'll tell you though, listener, these forests to the west of the highway look awful familiar.
They do. They look extremely familiar. I think I dug 10 test pits at every one of these culverts.
Yeah.
Yep.
I distinctly remember one day Greg and I recording what we thought was an area around a lake. That we got to the one end of the lake and realized that the sides of the lake were a little bit too steep and a little bit too uniform. And the historic aerial photos told us that what we had been looking at as maybe a lake was, in fact, a quarry.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's too bad.
Filled with water.
Yeah, and that's probably where someone wanted to dump the safe, but the safe was too heavy.
I will say it was far enough into the woods that looking at it now, like, it can't have been thrown from the highway.
Like someone really had to get out and lug it, or a four wheeler maybe was involved.
Maybe.
So, Ken, I'm looking at this road, and I'm surprised that it's not twinned, because it seems to have gotten bigger, for sure.
It definitely seems wider. So, there are passing lanes here, which didn't exist before.
Yeah.
So, did they maybe not twin it? They just added a lane?
It was definitely the twinning project.
Yeah.
Well, listener, if you work...
For the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure.
And you would like to send in an explainer.
Yeah.
And we're passing now a sign
for
the Auberge Buctuchian. Free Wi-Fi, pet friendly. And it has hot breakfast.
Oh, good.
I'd forgotten how exciting hot breakfast was.
There's nothing like those pancakes.
Yeah, I don't really remember the pancakes, but...
Yeah, we have a passing lane, so we're currently in a passing lane southbound, but it's definitely not divided highway.
It is not divided.
I mean, this is definitely safer than it was.
It is certainly safer than it was.
I'm not sure.
Part because there's a lot fewer archaeologists parked along the side of the road.
So that was the other thing. Yeah, yeah. I remember there was a really complicated. So because of the way that the overpasses worked. One of the things that was really challenging was that if you were surveying or if you were shovel testing at an area that was fairly close to an overpass, you had to drive sometimes 15 to 20 minutes up or down the road.
And
To turn around because there was a safety rule and a reasonable one that meant that you couldn't just turn your vehicle around off the side of the highway.
Yeah.
So that ended up adding a lot of time to your day.
Yes,
sometimes.
It did. It also was the sort of thing that, even though, as you pointed out, it was a perfectly reasonable safety rule, it could be absolutely enraging, depending on where you were working. You could find that just enormously frustrating.
Yeah. And, you know, on a day like today, where the thermometer on the car right now reads 27.5.
Yeah.
I think it was a comfortable 35 with humidity.
Yeah. These are Celsius degrees, American listener. That translates to about 135 Fahrenheit with a humidex of 612 Kelvin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Low bar pressure.
Yes.
And so, you know, you'd have these days where you're in the woods, and so there's actually very little breeze. There's a lot of bugs. And in some of these cases, so I remember, and I don't know, I don't think we'll go past Cocaine, because it's south of Bactouche, is that right?
Well, you know what the song says, Ken. Cocaine's for horses, it ain't for men.
Oh, I remember this place. We were shovel testing in, like, neck-high reeds, I believe, at one point.
As I pointed out, Ken, you had a much worse time. Your company had a lot less fun than we did on Route 11.
I do distinctly remember one day where the now partner of our friend of the show, Trevor, our dear friend Janice, called it an end of the day when one of the crew had asked Janice the same question for about the third time in about 5 minutes with totally straight-faced.
Right. And that crew member wasn't Ken. Had it been Ken, this would not have raised the alarm. But this crew member.
It was pretty clear that we were all cooking in our hard hats.
Right.
Because, you know, the provision of safety for a hard hat in 35-degree weather in an area where you have no overhead hazards always was a curiosity to me.
My recollection is that for some reason, I don't think we had to wear hard hats on that project.
But you worked for a different company.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
I think that may be another reason I was having a better time than you all were. But I think I was wearing a baseball hat and a reflective vest.
Yeah.
So, Ken, I think the road is actually exactly the same as it was where we are now.
Yeah, this looks untwinned and unwidened.
Yeah. So that's sort of fascinating. It continues to have, I remember these four-wheeler tracks around the... around the sides of the road where you would occasionally... I certainly found a pipe stem in one of these once, is my recollection.
Yeah, and I know I shovel tested in this roundabout right here.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely dug test pits in both sides of this.
Well, I think we have some questions about the provision of safety for the residents of whatever county we're in, I think Kent County.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we did our bit.
We did our bit.
Yeah.
There's also no moose fencing.
There is not any moose fencing. There is a sign, however.
That there may be moose in the area.
There may be moose in the area. And it feels like a moosey piece of road.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. It is quite pretty out here.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, this is a very beautiful country. And actually, so the highway that we're on, Route 11, is sort of the main corridor, but the old highway, 134, which runs parallel to this, is, I think, called the Acadian Coastal Route or something
like that.
That's
right, I think, yeah.
And is a much prettier drive because you kind of dart in and out of all of the small communities that that dot sort of the East Coast along here.
Yeah,
so.
It's pretty. Pretty dangerous.
and it is more dangerous than Route 11. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's also not a highway where you see heavy truck traffic or anything like that anymore. It's mostly a tourist highway.
Yes, that's right. And it is also not twinned.
It is not twinned.
Yeah.
And for a while, there were bridges that were just not... You were required to, like, go over to Route 11 to cross the water in a couple of places.
Oh, were you?
I seem to remember, yeah.
No,
some bridges, like... And this was a while ago. There's a sign for the dunes, the Bactouche Dunes.
Yes, and, which we were just admiring.
No, those were the dunes beside Indian Island.
Right.
Different dunes.
Okay, sorry. Yes. Yeah. The listener will know that I clearly have a good sense of geography. I think I know the inside of this hotel we're going to, like the back of my pocket.
Yes, yeah. It is a familiar space.
Yeah. Speaking of CRM, Ken, did you do some other projects out this way or pretty much just Route 11?
We did a major project south of here when I worked for Stantec, which was a cable interconnection project that was bringing linking up NB Power infrastructure to PEI and laying two massive undersea cables across the Northumberland Strait, which was actually a really fun project to work on.
Yeah. And what'd you find?
In the intertidal zone on the Borden side of the Northumberland Strait, we found a whole series of CN teacups.
Oh, lovely!
Where the ferry used to dump all the all of their so the boat captain who we did an underwater archaeology component, which was one of the funnest things I've done in my life, which was basically floating around on a small boat in the middle of the Northumberland Strait, and we had a dive team that was going down to assess what are essentially paleo landforms that are submerged underwater to check to see if there was any potential for encountering archaeological remains at the bottom of the Northumberland Strait. We didn't find anything in the strait itself, but in the intertidal zone where the ferry used to land in Borden. So instead of a bridge across the Northumberland Strait, there used to be a ferry that ran from Cape Tormentine to Borden PEI. And the boat captain for the boat that we were on explained to us that what would happen is the ferry, if it was really busy in the summer, they wouldn't have time to wash the dishes, and so they would just throw them out the window in the port. And so anyway, our diver, an archaeologist by training, but professional diving diver by his company, a guy from Newfoundland, found a whole series of CN teacups, and they were all like immaculate shape. And there was a series of logos, so you could actually track the logo change from the 1920s to the 1960s, was, something like that.
We can tell the listener that we will be drinking Courvoisier out of those very teacups now.
And I think PEI government actually kept them. I think because it was sort of, they were in such good shape, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And the logos.
Once you wash the food off of them, they were fine.
Yeah. Well, and the logos are one of these like diagnostic tools that you can use in historical archaeology.
Yes.
Which is that, you know, logos change over time, just the same as like bottle stamps change over time, and that can actually give you, you know, like some of these logos are only used for 8 to 10 years or something like that, and so you can know which era of CN this particular teacup came from, which
that's
is kind
right.
of cool.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So listener, we're about to be rolling in to Buktush.
Yeah.
Does it feel like you never left, Ken?
It feels like we're still on an untwinned highway.
Yes. There's nothing stranger, Ken, than getting on the road and expecting there to be two roads, but there's only one.
Yep. Oh, there it is. Hotel.
Here we are. So we, sorry, I just got a little shudder from the flashbacks of that Tim Hortons.
a lot of breakfast set there.
Yeah, a lot of breakfasts. A fair number of dinners, too, actually.
Yep.
Probably too much coffee, but I thought for a moment I saw Darcy sitting at that picnic table, but I think it was just a mirage.
Yeah, just his spirit wafting over the auberge after many years there.
Yes, I mean, we certainly remember in the battle days lots of spirits at that picnic table, I think.
So one of the things I think part of the reason we had to draw on Tim Hortons a lot was, my recollection was that the food scene in Buktush shut down much earlier than our work did.
Yes.
And we were often left in a situation where, was the P-Rat not here anymore?
I'm a little concerned because I'm recalling that there was a restaurant.
It was right across the parking lot, wasn't it?
That was my recollection.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it was in that building that now has a garage door.
I believe it was in that building that now has a garage door on it. But I could, you listener, we're gonna look into this.
Yep.
And we're gonna get back to you. I'm glad this thing still has its outdoor wood boiler.
Yeah, the wood doctor.
A product I never entirely understood. And listener, we're gonna check into this fine establishment, and contemplate what our next moves are. But don't worry, we'll keep you apprised of them.
Yep. Talk to you soon, listener.
Bye.
Okay, and we are back with the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, and we have set up in a mobile studio in the dining room of the Pleasant View Inn in Belle Isle Bay at Hatfield Point, right across from, what's the name of the wharf?
Hatfield Point Wharf, as a matter of fact.
Hatfield Point Wharf. So we are in along a branch of the Belle Isle Bay, which drains into the Bolostog, and we are joined today by host of the inn, Sharon Cunningham, who is also the president of the St. John River Society. And as I understand,
a podcast listener.
Well, I enjoy this podcast every evening that I decide I need something intellectual to help me go to sleep.
I was very pleased to hear that we're part of the evening conversation, and hopefully we're not putting everybody to sleep, but I'm glad that it helps you go to sleep.
That's thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here. Yeah.
So, Sharon, in your duties as the president of the St. John River Society, could you tell us a little bit about the organization and some of the work that you guys do?
Well, the St. John River Society has been around since the early 90s. It received various federal and provincial grants to basically provide stewardship for the St. John Wallstock River system. And it's had a varying history. We had a very dynamic executive director for several years, Molly Demma, who really set the pace for the society as it is today. Now we've received about 2 years ago a grant from the provincial government to basically protect the heritage wharves. We have deeds to 13 of what was originally 50 wharves on the Willowstoke River, from St. John to as far as Woodstock, with 13 of them mostly located below the dam here in New Brunswick. And that's been the focus for the past few years, to repair these heritage wharves to provide access to the river. Recreation is a big thing, and the environment is a big thing, and more people want to be on the water, and we want to provide that kind of access.
And just for the listener, so the wharves, these are historic sites and historic wharves, and these are the ones that would have been associated with steamboat travel on the river?
Yes, that's right. When the settlers came, well, the roads were non-existent, and the waterways in New Brunswick are very fine and were very viable for this kind of transportation. And where various farms were located, various wharves were built. And produce was shipped from these farms and to St. John, to the markets. And the other point about these wharves were traditional landing places of peoples before the settlers. That's why the settlers found the land so attractive in those areas, and that's why the wharves were built there.
So there's probably a little bit of an archaeological component to this work. And so are you working, is there part of the project that will involve archaeology and historians and that sort of thing? Or is it specifically sort of the infrastructure of the wharves that is trying to be upgraded and then go from there?
Well, in New Brunswick, you can't really upgrade or do much with anything that has been built by settlers, because a lot of it is on land that is indeed unceded, and indeed were settlements and passageways for those who've come before us. So yes, there are several wharves that do need this kind of archaeological review, and several of them are in that process right now.
Very fascinating. And so apart from the wharves, are there other initiatives that the society undertakes? I remember we had talked a while ago about some research work that you guys had been working on. And there's, I believe it is the Elora project that you had undertaken a few years ago.
Well, yes, it was the Eloha project, and don't ask me what E-L-O-H-A stands for, but it was a very interesting project to review the flow of the Wallstock and how it has affected both social and economic progress or change during the years. And this project was to include all the communities along the Wallstock. We finished up that project, which was funded by the Atlantic Environmental Initiative this past year. And we find that the Eloha document that has been prepared, which is on our website, stjohnriversociety.org, could be a very influential document in going forward with the river. But our most recent project is Be Wake Aware. And that arose out of basically noisy powerboats. We're more than that. Yeah, noise is a problem, but one of the issues is the erosion of the shoreline, especially sensitive shoreline areas. And our plan this year, partly funded by the Environmental Trust Fund of New Brunswick and the Wildlife Fund Foundation, we are encouraging education of boaters and those who use the river to be more cautious in speed and be more aware of the damage that can be caused by wakes.
Well, that's and I believe you had we were at a talk last night that I gave, and you had pamphlets on this, and so maybe this is one of these things that somebody could find on the website, some information about that?
Oh, most certainly. You can find us at websites, you can find us at wharves, you can find us at markets during the summer. We're very, very interested in being and having the community be wake aware, and social media has been great for this. We really have managed to reach a lot of communities, and we look forward to continuing this.
Okay. And so they can find you on social media and the website. We will add that stuff to the show notes. Can people get involved with the St. John River Society in any way?
Oh, yes, of course you can. The river is 673 kilometers, and we would like representation from the whole thing. The river begins in Maine, goes through Quebec, comes down the whole province, and there's room for everyone to volunteer. We're really looking forward to people to help us be wharf stewards. In fact, we have a name for them. They're called wharfingers. So if you want a t-shirt that says wharfinger. Just contact us. We'd be happy to make you a member of our group.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Sharon. And for those of you who don't know, Sharon has been our lovely host for my field work for the last few seasons. And so for anybody who is looking for a lovely place to stay and a beautiful view when you wake up and an excellent breakfast, you can visit Sharon's lovely establishment here at Pleasant View Inn. And so thank you, Sharon, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, you're more than welcome. Come again.
That's excellent.
Okay, good. Okay.
Well, listener, we are back, and actually it's just I am back. This is a solo cast from the Calgary airport. I am wrapping up my research trip, and unfortunately I am not casting from the Calgary airport Chili's owing to a fairly tight connection between Calgary and Lethbridge. So I am actually hanging out in the A01 to 06 gates area, which is a bit of a holding pen for these smaller connecting flights in this airport. And I am on my way back to Lethbridge after a couple of weeks of collections and field work in New Brunswick. It was a great stay. It was nice to catch up with colleagues and friends and get some research work done and also spend some time with my family while I was there. Mostly successful trip. We got advanced some work with the Bailey Collection, which I think you'll probably start to hear a little bit more about on the pod this season, and got out and did some field work as part of some erosion survey work that I've been doing that we'll probably talk about in a little bit more detail. Gabe isn't joining us tonight. As I understand, he is in the mountains. I assume he has come down from the mountains safely after a hike today. And I am probably about 5 or 10 minutes away from hearing a boarding call for my connection to Lethbridge. So this is just going to be a short check-in. I know you would have loved to hear what Tex-Mex flavors I was dipping into tonight. But unfortunately, my supper was actually at O'Malley's in the Ottawa airport, which was it was acceptable. It did not have the Tex-Mex flair or the 15 times shaken margaritas like our friend at Chili's. So I will sign off for now, listener. We will talk to you soon. And this will probably just be packaged in with a bunch of other content from the last few weeks. And I hope you've enjoyed it. Talk to you soon, listener.
So, Ken, we're traveling through time again.
We are.
We have just moved from August to September, which is, good in some ways that we've regained control of linear time. But there is a serious downside, which is that we are both now back to work. I mean, we enjoy our jobs, listener. Don't get us wrong. But I have to say, I don't particularly enjoy the first 2 weeks of September part of my job, where everything is due. Everyone is panicked, and also Shirk is due to top it off. That's really the...
It's also when everybody discovers that they haven't held a meeting for 4 months, and so there's an opportunity to have
every meeting you could possibly need in the first two weeks. And none of which are super productive because everybody has forgotten what the where they left off.
That's right.
In May.
Yes. Yeah. And it's also especially good because it turns out that many of the things you were meeting about in early September are time sensitive, and they were time sensitive to July. So so you're in serious trouble. But I was excited to come back to my desk and to find an edited volume that I've actually been quite looking forward to.
I think it's time for Hit Pieces, right?
We've got a hit here,
which
I've been looking forward to. And that is a edited volume in AP3A, which is the Archaeological Papers of the American Anthropological Association. And this is volume 35, issue 1, and it's called Finding Fields, the Archaeology of Agricultural Landscapes. And it's edited by Maddie McLeister and Jesse Cassana, both friends of ours out of Dartmouth. And what I think is particularly interesting about this is that it does not deal specifically with the Northeast, but it outlines all sorts of methods that I think would be really cool to see applied to the Northeast. It outlines things, particularly articulating with geophysical techniques, and the other things that include locating irrigation and also using archaeobotany as well to identify these fields. Part of the reason I'm so interested in this is that questions about maize in southern New England and forms of horticulture there, as well as questions about horticulture up here in New Brunswick, which some remain a little bit unresolved, I would say, Ken.
Yeah, it's interesting research. And I think, like you said, I haven't had a chance to flip through this, but providing that kind of methodological background, that's a, for those of you who are listening and thinking about graduate projects, this is something that maybe you can take a flip through this and consider, is there something that I could do in the Maritimes or in Maine, where I can apply these methods and potentially go out and, help answer one of the big questions, I think, in Atlantic Northeast archaeology, really.
I think that's right. So congratulations to Maddie and Jesse and to all of their, contributors. And I especially was pleased to notice that, one of my old professors, Greg Zaro, is a contributor.
Oh, very nice. Congratulations, Greg and Maddie and...
Jesse Cassana is the other.
Jesse Cassana.
Yes, yeah. So, and I, some of this, I'm actually not 100% sure if this is open access or not, but look for it at your library or look for it online as well. Well, Ken.
I think we've done it.
I think we have traveled through time. I think we've given out some sweet prizes. I think we've enjoyed our mailbox, and I think we've done hit pieces, and I think we have really set the stage to crack the mystery of Route 11.
I think we have, yeah. And again, listener, if you have listened to this conversation and you've listened to our breakdown of the passing lanes and all the various additions to Route 11, and you are a familiar and won't break some kind of confidentiality agreement or get yourself fired, purely out of fascination, I'd be curious what the decision-making process was that led to it not being twinned.
I would too. And Emmanuel can probably do one of those voice-changing softwares if we need to bring you on secretly to outline Route 11.
Yeah. Deep throat of the Route 11 mystery.
So, exactly. Yeah. I mean, in this day, I'm not actually going to meet you in a parking garage to find out the secrets, but whatever. Yeah, I live a little. I might.
Yeah. I think we can be reasonably assured that what it came down to was politics of some kind.
I bet so. Politics and money.
Yeah.
So. It's possible the archaeology costs so much they couldn't afford the twinning.
Hey, that's like I don't want to say that that's a possibility, but I think it is. There is a possibility that is was a contributing factor.
It is. I assume we paid for a new wing on the hotel anyway. All right, listener. Well, we will talk to you again in a fortnight. Thank you for tuning in. And listener, if you are enjoying the show, we would actually really appreciate if you could press the button on your podcast listening service that reviews this podcast. If you're not enjoying the show, don't worry about this at all. Just back away and don't press anything. But if you think this is a 5-star podcast, we'd love if you hit the 5-star button.
Yeah. Apparently, that's a big thing for your metrics and getting exposure. So the more 5-star reviews, I guess, the more that our podcast will circulate through the algorithms. So
that's right. So thanks very much, listener. We appreciate it, and we're looking forward to chatting to you in a fortnight.
Thanks, listener. We'll talk to you soon in 14 days hence.